Three, two, one.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Ezra Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at Revive, and I'm joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Jess. So good to be with you and have this exciting conversation.
Yes, yes, yes. Excited. I know we've been having a lot of guests on the show here recently, and the torch has been passed between the three of us, but Chris will not be on this episode. But that's because we have a guest joining us, a guest by the name of Lewis Williams, head of brand impact for Weber. He has worked for many years at Leo Burnett and was chief creative officer at Burrell before coming to Weber. So we're excited to have you on and hear all the things, because you just got back from Cannes, didn't you?
Cannes, France. And hello, Dez, and hello, Stephanie. Nice to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you.
So excited to have you report back from the beaches.
And all of the juicy party details as well. We can save that for after the show.
I'm sorry, Dez, but what happens in Cannes stays in Cannes.
I will have to find a way to get there then. Let me create a killer campaign so that I can go to Cannes.
There you go.
So as you can tell, we're going to be doing a recap of what occurred, what stood out, what was really interesting. So let's jump into our topic at hand. Lewis, would love to hear from you. I know that you have actually, you've judged a number of campaigns throughout the years. If you could just kind of give us a quick overview of what Cannes Lion is.
Well, Cannes Lion is really a festival of creativity, creativity and inspiration. It's global. And what's really great about Cannes this year is it's celebrating its 70th year, 70, which is really fantastic. And they talked about that a little bit because it started just with film. And now it's everything, right? I mean, I can't wait next year. I'm quite sure Threads is going to have an activation there, right? So with the tech explosion, it really is expanded. But it's creativity in all platforms and all formats. And no idea is too small, no idea is too big. But the globalness of creativity and inspiration is something like you've never seen before. So if you ever get a chance to get there, you understand what it means to win a Cannes Lion or just even be acknowledged by a shortlist by Cannes Lion.
You mentioned that it was a festival. So, kind of give us a rundown of what's going on. And is it kind of like a South by Southwest, or is it purely just looking at marketing campaigns? What's going on there?
Yeah. It's South by Southwest. I think, it's seminars, it's experiences, it's looking at great, fantastic work in every platform. It's the socialization of everything. It's just so many people coming from all parts of the globe celebrating creativity, and just has a festive atmosphere to it, or creativity, So it's just everybody's on the same page, just respecting and looking at and applauding great work. So it just has a festival atmosphere around the whole thing, because you have celebrities coming in from everywhere. And it just, again, with the tech companies coming in with tech kind of money, right? So, and you have everything from saving the planet, to sports figures and musicians, all these personalities that you just love to see and hear and talk. It's just really just wonderful. It just has that festival atmosphere to it. Yeah.
Wow, it sounds like it's, just all over the map. All right, yeah. I'm going to get my act together so I can get there.
There you go.
All right, what were some of the standout pieces that you saw while you were there?
Dez and Stephanie, I got to say this before I get there. And I don't know whether or not it's a matter of I've been to this maybe my seventh time going to Cannes. and I've seen a lot of work, right? So when you see a lot of work, you say, okay, I've seen that, a version of that before. But I think about when it comes to equality this year, and I think about what was happening in the year, this year, I expected to see more impactful work overall. And I did not. I mean, last year when the war in Ukraine happened, you saw a lot of that work and the world, and it was reflected in the work, you know? But when I think about, especially coming from North America, and I think about Roe versus Wade, and I'm not saying what side of that you're on, doesn't matter, but that was a really big thing. And I didn't see any work that addressed issues like that. It sounded like it was a pretty quiet year. So I don't know if everybody just sort of tapped out, you know what I mean, with everything that's going on. And you know, it just really surprised me that. So I was really kind of really honestly disappointed in not seeing that. And because I think that's where you, it's interesting too, it about can you take a temperature, right, of the world, what's going on, is that's reflected in the work. And I just didn't see that. It's like, CAN was over here and the world was over there. It's like even last year, Greenpeace had a protest at CAN. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, because one of the companies there against the oil companies, right? And so they showed up and did a big little scene, which was a big deal. So again, it's bringing what's happening in the world there. And it seemed like that was ignored. Now, with that said, now, still is a lot of great work. I mean, I saw, you know, I'm big on equality and inclusion and DEI. And there's a really great piece of work from Apple where all called The Greatest. I don't know if you've seen it, The Greatest. But I just really thought just what a wonderful nod to the disability community. What a great connection to the brand and to the power of that particular product of the iPhone and Apple as a tech company, you know, what the benefits of their product, I thought was just fantastic. And you always, you know, you go to Cannes, you walk away with this little thing. I remember years ago, we were talking about the cloud. I'm like, the cloud? Oh yeah, you'll be able to go anywhere in the world and pull down. I'm like, huh, the cloud? Then you come back and it's the cloud, right? But, you know, one little thing that I think is interesting, did you know that was male and female trees?
I did not know that there were gender within trees.
Yeah, and some trees, this is, I forgot for, it was one of the, it was about pollen, right? Because you have a lot of, what you call it? The allergies, right? For people with allergies, right? I forgot what company was that, what brand, Zyrtec or Claritin or something like that. But it's certain kind of trees that produce pollen. And whatever kind of tree that is, come in male and female. So the whole idea is to plant more female trees because the male trees, of course, spread the pollen more. Female trees, of course, are more responsible, you know, soaks in the pollen. So right now there's too many male trees, which makes the pollen count higher. So there's a whole campaign to plant more female trees to equal that out. So you always walk away with someone found that little wonderful nugget somewhere, right? And you go like, oh, wow, fantastic. So that's what I love about it. It's a little thing, but your reaction is like, wow, really? I didn't know that.
Well, I think that's amazing. There's so much to dig into there. I mean, first of all, I'll tell a little side story, which is like I knew there was male and female corn because I detasseled when I was in college, which means you take the male parts off so there's can be more fertilization. So I worked in the cornfields. But anyway, uh-huh. That aside, I never thought of the idea of how that has an effect on the environment and the world. And what I love about that, you know, little nugget that you just mentioned is it's so culturally relevant, you know, with the conversation we have about, you know, gender and female, you know, empowerment and all. That's so interesting. That's a great example of a big insight. That's mm-hmm. really cool. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there was an ad we were talking in a couple of days ago about the My New Vagina mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. campaign. Talk a little bit about that, because especially knowing that there is all of this discussion, especially in Tennessee and other states around the country and legislation, but just kind of curious to hear more about that campaign.
Yeah, it was great. You know, as you know, I was on the Glass jury, which is really about gender equality for women mainly, right? And that appeared. And there's a product in Brazil, I think, and it's interesting to the brand. The brand is a brand that, you know, celebrates female products, that represents female products and everything. And it's interesting because On My New Vagina is that they make a product for people who transition over, right? And there's a lot of care that you have to take when you go through that structural change. There's a lot of care that you have to go through, and the products are not there to help, you know, make that transition easier. So what was interesting about this particular brand, there's another thing when you judge too, you learn all these things about brands. It's like, in Brazil, it's only like maybe less than 1% of people that actually get to go through the structural transition. So this company, this brand, just took it upon themselves to make this product. It's not profitable because you just can't sell enough of it because it's just, you know, just not that many people. But they say, look, okay, we care about women. We care about women's health. Okay, we take this responsibility, even though it's a very small fraction. And most brands would have said, hey, there's no profit there. There's no money there. This brand said, no, this is what we're about, this higher purpose, feminine care. And this group, even though minute, small, we're going to make this product because it's necessary. So they invested all the science and all that to make that. And it was just so great. It was so great. And what was really wonderful, we got a chance to meet a young lady with her new vagina. You know what I mean? She didn't show it to us now.
You kept it PG.
But she was able to come over and present to the jury, because this was a live jury where the shortlist people actually came over and presented live. But it just really sort of just, what I like about a brand like that, that understands the higher purpose. And we know a lot of consumers care about that. Like brands just, okay, yeah, you got to make a profit, but there's a higher purpose, the reason why you exist. And that was really just a wonderful campaign, and how it just made a difference, even though it was less than 1% of the people in Brazil.
So let me ask a question. I think that I'm gathering a theme, and for something to show up, and be worthwhile and worth discussion. It seems like it has to, A, take a stand for something big and important, you know, ideally culturally relevant, and B, you know, do something or make some change. So like Apple, you know, your Apple example with the greatest, what's so cool about that is it's not just an ad. It is the idea of, you know, helping those with all abilities is so firmly integrated in their products, right? Or the tree example that you gave, it's like making, you know, standing up for climate change and doing something about it. So it seems like all three of the examples you gave do those things. Is that a good assessment? Or like, tell us kind of, what does it take to show up in that conversation in a big way?
Yeah, Cannes Lions, what I love about Cannes Lions is going beyond. It's going beyond. It's really understanding why your brand is here. It's taking your idea to the nth degree and finding a very unique space. Because you see a lot of work. But, and to your point too, I want to bring this out, is that I have this thing called a tourist. And I don't like tourists. What we mean by that is that a lot of brands come over and they're not committed. And when you read the case studies or when you talk to them live, you see they really didn't go all the way. They really wasn't truly committed. And it's like, you know, we're seeing the tourists, right? They come in, they take selfies, and they quickly turn around and walk away, right? They go to the restaurants that other tourists goes to, right? And you can see that in the work. So to your point, when you come in with work, with a purpose, and a higher purpose, with a brand, making a statement to make it a better world, because one of the things that we say to all of us at Cannes, you are creative, you are blessed with the talent and the resources to make a difference in this world. so you should. So that's a responsibility for creativity. And you walk away with that in mind. So, you know, from child, you know, we saw things from sexual abuse to period poverty to young ladies not being allowed to read or marry who they would like. I mean, all of these things, like, how can we use creativity for good to make a difference in the world? And yes, Stephanie, that's it. That it has to resonate and go to the nth degree. And not only just from the idea and the purpose, but the craft. I mean, every single thing has to be hitting 100. You know, the cinematography, the dialogue, of course, the unique insight, right? Everything has to be hitting on 100. And just to dip down in either one of those can cost you a canned lion. I'll make a difference between gold, silver, bronze, and Grand Prix.
You know, you mentioned something very important, and it's also an influence of tech. Like, it's exciting to see tech and their influence coming in on Canned Lion and what's to come. But there's also the the downside of that. What you were saying about, like, they didn't go all the way. They just kind of found this one little nugget, this one little insight, and ran with it instead of going all the way through, kind of like a tourist. Like, in a way, a lot of us are finding ourselves being tourists to life. Like, we're just kind of scrolling through. We're just kind of driving through. We're, you know, we're capturing it for the gram, but not really even, you know, digesting it. And I always say this about music. I miss the days where we used to devour an album. You know, I remember getting the CD, the cassette, the record player, record, and just going and reading through all the liner notes. You're memorizing all of the lyrics. You're sitting with that piece of work. And we don't do that anymore. We got Spotify. So if there's like a little song, we can listen to that and skip on to the next. But it's that going in and actually in ingrating yourself in that work. Do you feel that's missing in general, like overall?
It's missing, because one of the things when it comes to tech company, real quick to say, you know, a tool or tech is not an idea. You know what I mean? When you look at this wonderful idea, it's like technology and the idea and the purpose, just it disappears. It just becomes the thing itself. If you see and feel the technology, then that just yells tourists. It yells that you're using the latest tool. All right. Because we're talking about AI and all of that, it's like it still is a tool. You know, we still got to work that out, and it's going to make creativity better. But we cannot forget that it is a tool. And if you feel that tool, if you sense that tool, then it's not working. It's not going to get you anywhere. You know, so that's very important.
You'd mentioned about the fact that if you don't. If you kind of stay surface level, that, you know, that can kind of cost you, you know, level of award. I think there was a little campaign that could that you all had experienced while you were judging. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It's really interesting, too. Again, what I love about Cannes. Sometimes it's the big brands, the big apples, right, that spends millions of dollars, right? But sometimes it's that little engine that could, you know, because creativity, you know, again, you have the big United States, the UK, you know, all of the big countries that, you know, come in and spend billions of dollars. Then all of a sudden, just this small team in a country that you never heard of. So this actually came out of the US, but again, it came from a creative team, not even a creative team. It came from a young dad. He came from a young dad, and he happened to be African-American, and he was concerned about his wife, who I was during the pandemic, so the wife wasn't happy with the doctor, you know, because you couldn't change doctors during the pandemic, right? It was like, you was kind of stuck with what you had. He had to ride with it, right? And he was like, wasn't happy with the response, and because she was having pain here and there, right? And and she just, he felt like the doctor was just blowing her off. And then he started doing his research. And as you know, I don't know if you know or don't know, but infant mortality is twice as high in the African-American community. And I think, I forgot the name of the young track star that just passed away. I mean, maybe a month ago, because of this. And he felt like the medical profession was being somewhat biased and not being sensitive to African American women. And so he wanted to do something about it. This is a young dad, a dad to be, you know? And so he got the most famous book when it comes to that women read during pregnancies, like everything. What is it? What you need to
What to
know,
expect when you're expecting?
what to expect when you're expecting. And they contacted them and said, "Hey, you're not. There's nothing in your book that's talking about, bias when it comes to addressing African American women." And they didn't get a very good response from them. So know what they did? They made a book cover. They made a book cover to the same exact size that had all of the information about for Black women. Not all of it, but a lot of information about Black women. And it had a QR code to where else to go to get additional information. And so every time you went to Amazon, you had an opportunity. You go to Amazon, you can say, oh, you can, if people bought this, you can buy this to go with that. So here's with this book cover. So if you were an African American woman, you saw that book, then you could see to get this book cover with it, and then they gave you the information to it. So, but that little movement, that little idea of a man just caring about his kid to be and about the health of his wife, won him a silver lining. And again, it touched on something again, just like we talked about disability, the underserved markets, right? And just the idea of a passion of living in a place. He wasn't a tourist. He was living that lived experience that fueled that idea. And it's just a simple book cover over one of the most best-selling books there is. And it's just that little thought, that little act was just so big, right? And we was impressed with that.
That's I love that it's the sim we've been saying this, forever in advertising and marketing. It's the simplest ideas that stick, right? And that's such a great example because it's, to your point, it's a very simple idea. It's very affordable, right? It's very doable. It's very realistic. It doesn't have all these complexities or pieces and parts to it. And also, more importantly, it makes a change. It makes a difference.
It makes a difference.
That's so inspiring. And I love how, you started that story talking about how it doesn't always take a massive budget. I think sometimes that's something that is easy to become a myth.
It's about creativity, it really at its core, everything's about creativity.
You had mentioned about kind of what you were noticing as far as like the cultural impact of work, and like so there were a few nuggets of making a difference, and like this was an example of where this particular piece of work was, I think, originally kind of looked over and then went from being looked over to silver lining. And this was, the work of this young Black dad. Kind of curious to hear more about your thoughts on the role of more diverse voices in creativity.
It's interesting. Can itself is working. They understand they have a diversity issue, can. And for the last few years, they have something called the CANS CAN Diversity Collective. The CANS CAN Diversity Collective. And they say, okay, we understand we have a lot of the talent being used in marketing is diverse, especially Black, globally. I mean, you see campaigns with Snoop Dogg coming out of Australia. It's so funny. It's like, Snoop Dogg in Australia? It's like, yeah. So those, but again, but the people making it, the people coming on stage to get the Cannes Lion, they knew they was missing. So they have they've been working for the last 5 years, and they have a beach there called the Ink Well. And so the Ink Well is where you go, special sessions and speakers and that would come and spend time at the Ink Well to talk about issues about mentoring, the power of Black creativity, the power of culture, all happens at the Ink Well. So it just kind of gives away a safe space, a concentrated space. And it's always happens. It's really interesting Cannes always happens the third week in June, maybe, which is always Juneteenth. Every time I've been there, it's been Juneteenth. And they acknowledge it. They acknowledge it. Cannes acknowledges Juneteenth there. So the Inkwell is giving it a place of concentration to come and talk about that, as well as entertainment. Nas was there entertaining last year. But what was really great as I talk about diversity is that I have to tip my hat off to Cannes, is that this year, for the very first time, they created this award called the Creative Maker of the Year. The Creative Maker of the Year. They acknowledged Spike Lee. And Spike Lee was there to pick up the award. And Spike Lee gave a great speech that only Spike Lee could. But again, when you think about the first time they created this award, and the first recipient of that award was a person of color. And I think that went a long way of acknowledging that. And not only was Spike, when Spike talked about his impact on the Nike brand and with Michael Jordan, and you talk about culture, sneaker culture, you talk about the power of MJ, the NBA, and sports marketing, and all of that, and just the rise of Nike as a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar corporation. He was a part of that. So I think that really went a long ways in acknowledging the power of diversity. So Cannes is getting better and better and better. And this year's it was I think they call it the most diverse Cannes ever. And you felt it. Still has a ways to go, but they're acknowledging people in front of and behind of the idea as well. So that's important. But hopefully we can keep that going.
Yeah, I mean it was major that time period of 'cause even like Spike Lee, he did a film around, like it was called Inkwell, right?
Yeah. The Inkwell, it's no, his very first film was She's Gotta Have It. Yeah. And it was in, yeah, it was yeah, his very first film. But even what his was interesting about that, Des, was that he talked about how the ad agency called him up. And he said, "Look, I just finished the film that I put on my credit cards. And here's this major ad agency calling me, Wieden & Kennedy, saying we want you to do a TV commercial with Michael Jordan." And he was like, and so as we talk about agencies taking chances on BIPOC talent, sometimes, you don't have to go to the tried and true people. I thought it was an acknowledgement at that time for those people to go to this little unknown. As we talk about, think about influencers, Stephanie and Des, it's like everybody want to go to the mega influencers, but sometimes it's that little small influencer that's going to give you the most, that's more connected to the community than you think, right? And Spike Lee was that. If you go run the reel back, right? He's not a big time director. He's some little guy out of Brooklyn that did, a film with $30,000 on credit cards, and Nike called him up. And it was so funny when he said he got a chance to talk to Michael and said Michael could have chosen any director he wanted to. And said, "Why did you choose him?" He said, Michael looked at him, said, "You wear my damn shoes."
Wow.
It was that simple, because in the film he wore Jordans, but he was just wearing Jordans because he was a black guy wearing Jordans. He didn't think about, "I'm gonna wear these Jordans and somebody's gonna see them." And Michael said, "Because you wore my shoes."
So this is fascinating. I know about Spike DDB from Bozeman St. John's recent biography, which was amazing, and she talks about her time at Spike DDB. But what you're talking about is sort of the origin story, right? So it's
Yes.
like them Nike hiring Spike DDB back in, what was that, the early 2000s?
No, it wasn't even Spike DDB. It was just Spike Lee,
Okay,
period.
pre ad agency. So the origin story of his ad agency. Okay.
Before his ad agency, he was a kid out of film school that made his birth.
Wow.
And we're talking 19, it could have been 1985, 86. Yeah, I mean, long before that. And then when you talk about going into culture, see, he was in culture. They saw that. They saw that. They found this little kid that did this little movie that happened to be wearing Jordans. And it changed the world. But again, that's like sometimes the answer is not with the mega stars and not with the mega influencers. It's like that's, again, not being a tourist. They went deep into the community and found that special place to eat, right? They found that, and God, the rest is history. Because Spike, when he got on the stage, he said, "Wow, I shouldn't be here. How did I end up getting the Maker of the Year from Cannes Lions? I got this call. I didn't know what advertising was." And I ended up doing a commercial for one of the most well known, if not the most well known athlete in the world in history.
You mentioned Wieden and Kennedy. There's a new book from Dr. Marcus Collins, who's a chief strategist there, as well as a professor at University of Michigan. I've been reading his book for the culture. I think there's like okay, yay! Let's talk about it. Another episode. But he talks about like harnessing what is going on in the culture and understanding what people are experiencing, how they're feeling, like what is, and that's an exact example of, hip hop culture, basketball culture, sneaker culture. This was all kind of bubbling up in the '80s, the mid '80s. And that voice of Spike Lee being a director and showcasing that in the movie and his films, and how you can, as a brand, be a part of that, take hold and listen and pay attention to what's going on, what people are feeling, experiencing, and then tap into that to make an impact. Just kind of curious your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking to Marcus too, and I'm going to get him to come talk to us as well. So So Marcus is great. But yeah, I mean, it's always been there, but I think that we didn't call it anything. Now it's sort of like, we're really good now. All of a sudden, we tag things now, but they've been there for years. And some brands that's been doing really well actually was doing that, but we didn't call it that. And now we're just more aware of it. And you're seeing it, which also makes me nervous, because now when you become aware of it, that's when you mess things up. Now you're trying to look for it. You're trying to identify. You have people not qualified to hunt for it that's hunting for it. So it gets misused.
So a question here. So since I hear from Des, we're maybe close to wrapping up, I want to see if you have advice, Louis, after sitting through all this, and you've given some amazing examples and I think some really good applicable, kind of guidance. But what can creatives and also brands, marketers, we've got a lot of listeners here who are, on the brand side. Mm-hmm. What can we all be doing to go beyond being a tourist? And how do we not do it at the level of it's like, oh, now I'm a cultural anthropologist, right? in a sense that's real and deep, and to your point, finding the place to eat, that our congregation is at, to use one of Marcus Collins' words, finding the congregation. So give us some tips.
One word, empathy. Empathy. I mean, no matter what you make, what service you have, just think about empathy and look at it through the lens of someone else. It's just that simple. Empathy is like, okay, I don't care what I make, what I do, but have empathy for someone else and how they might look at it and understand there's so many different lenses. And also to make it personal. I mean, if you go back to every brand or service, and whoever that originator or creator was, go back to why they created it. Because there was a need for something. And so often we get away from our own narrative, our own purpose of why we created a company or a service. You know what I mean? We get away from that. And so many brands, when they do air, what do they say? We got to go back to what got us here. So as a brand, if you are creative, try to make things personal if you can. Use your own experiences, because so often once we become employees of an agency, we leave ourselves and our life experiences outside. We should bring that with us We should use your family stories. We should use your family, you know, menus and recipes and stories that you've heard. Bring them to work with you, and it'll give you, make you feel more part of the work. You will benefit by it, the company will. It'll be more rewarding for you. So it's really simple. There's no holy grail here. I think we just get carried away with, you know, all these fancy things. But if you just keep it basic and keep it about yourself, keep it personal. You know what I mean? And you'll get there real easy and just follow yourself. Yeah, we take our human hat off this, and it's like, wait a minute, I don't care if you're the EVP, Vice P, GD, EK, PP, whatever. You're a mom, you're a dad, you're an aunt, you're an uncle, you're dyslexic, you hard of hearing, you're blonde. You're a human being. And so often we forget that.
Mm-hmm. So connecting that to the work that our clients are doing in healthcare. I know that we do a lot of service line marketing, and that's an approach that we're taking, getting in the headspace, getting into the hearts of the experience of the person that is needing that care. Yeah. And then how can we connect with them on a personal and individual level? So I love that. Thank you so much again, Lewis, for joining us. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for listening. And if there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure to share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be very much appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and the empathy. And we'll see you next time. 3.